Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very accomplished designer, Hina Handa, with me. Hina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. Thanks for having me here. Thank you.
Hina is the founder of EDC Space, where she says expressions and design board come together. She's from the National Institute of Design in Ahmedabad, and in her own words, she's been a wildlifer since she was 12 years old. So Hina, tell me a little bit about your early career.
So I started out wanting to be a photographer,
okay.
A Nat Geo photographer. And things took me to the mountains, wildlife was my passion, and so was, climbing. I was a climber. Mm-hmm. So all three combined, I decided that I wanted to work in the mountains. So the kind of things that people, the way they build out there, what they do with their culture, mm-hmm. how they, the handicrafts, little things, mm-hmm. and I wanted to shoot it all. So, but then I met my husband, mm-hmm. who was in Delhi, and that ended because there was no way that I could be in the mountains and him here.
Okay.
So I ended up coming back.
And then what took you to NID?
Design?
Huh? I mean, was that from mountains to NID?
No, you must have made the transition. That was after NID.
Okay.
That was after NID.
Okay. Wonderful. So, when I was reading about you, your credo, you say, is you create your future with the power of your intention. Help me understand this.
Okay, so most people have no idea where they're going. You know, they'll sort of take an opportunity which comes up, they'll meander all over the place. But I've done the same. I think all of us have.
Most of us.
But there are times when there is something that you just have to do.
Correct.
There is no option. There's no plan B.
Okay.
And that is when your intention is to get there or to do that or to make that impact or to do whatever. Mm. It happens.
Okay.
Because you find ways to, the universe conspires.
Okay.
You make things happen. The steps happen. People appear who help you on your journey.
So it's all scripted.
No, it's not scripted. I think there are various alternatives. Mm. It's for you to pick the paths that you want to take.
I agree. So let's move to EDC. Tell me about the scope of work you do. And anyone who creates, I have a lot of respect for.
Thank you.
You're doing some amazing work, I'm sure.
Thank you. So we, in EDC, we are consultants. We are architectural and interior design consultants. And my specialty is actually experiential design.
Okay.
So that is taking into, when you have spaces that are, it's not just about making a space beautiful. Mm. It's about having that space really resonate with the person who's living there. Mm. It may not be beautiful, but that person has to be peaceful or really excited or whatever it is that that person is aspiring to.
Correct.
Has to be there.
Okay.
And so we design and we supervise execution. We are not doing turnkey jobs,
mm.
but we go into a lot of detail and we make sure that the project gets kicked off the ground.
Okay.
So it's most firms, in fact, this is something that I'm trying to change,
mm.
but most firms are happy to leave the responsibility to somebody else to execute or to take it forward.
Okay.
So we kind of encompass all of that and take it one step further.
And when you say that, you do experiential design, what does that mean?
Should I tell you with an example?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So now in, say, a restaurant, you have, most people will design a restaurant, somebody who's setting it up,
mm-hmm.
will design a restaurant basis the kind of customer that they are looking at attracting, or maybe not, or maybe something to do with the food, if it's Italian food. Now, the people who are going to be coming to that restaurant are not the only ones who are using that space.
Okay.
You have the owners, you have management, you have staff, and you have customers. Now, if we focus everything on customers and we don't focus on staff, we don't provide the right spaces for them,
correct.
They're going to be unhappy.
Okay.
If the management is not trained well and they are going to crack the whip, your staff is unhappy.
Okay.
If the staff is unhappy, they will leave.
Hmm.
Attrition,
yeah.
You have management who is going to suffer because of that. They will lose ROI.
Okay.
And ultimately the owner is going to be unhappy. And very often restaurants close down like this.
Okay.
So it's combining everything to work together. It's actually psychological profiling.
Oh, wonderful.
Wonderful.
So, whenever I have done a little bit of work to get something designed for myself, I just give an idea.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all your clients come and do that.
Yeah.
And then you actually convert it into a work of art, if I can use that term.
Yeah.
What goes into, you know, really creating an idea into something which is so incredible?
It's conversations.
Okay.
It's if I'm designing something for you, mm-hmm. then it's who you are.
Okay.
The most important thing is, what is your essence? What is your vision? What are your dreams? You won't know how to even, you can articulate those probably in words, but how do you articulate them in space?
Absolutely.
In the use of that space. So typically, you know, you would go with something that was traditional or that's been done before, or that you know, you've seen pictures and you know that. It's for us to find alternatives which are creative.
Okay.
So the solutions of...
And in this process, is there a lot of back and forth between the client and you, and the client say, I don't like this, and you say, change it? That must be quite...
So we don't normally go, I don't like this, change this, because a lot of it is done in discussion.
Okay.
Which is why it takes longer for us to arrive at a brief than it would, you know, that you telling me, I want this place designed. And this is my image, this is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And cut ho gaya. Or we give you three options. Nothing like that. The conversations have to happen regardless of what kind of space
it is. Very interesting. And, you know, you said you were used to go up in the mountains, and obviously you keep looking wherever you go. You still go. Where do you get the motivation? I mean, I've often wondered, people, you know, when I'm saying Dubai and I see this incredible buildings, but all look different.
Mm.
And then I compare it to what we have in Gurgaon, they all look like matchboxes, the little top being changed.
Yeah.
I wonder, where do people like you get such incredible inspirations?
Again, it is to do with the people that we design for, the people that we meet. So there are people who want signatures on buildings or spaces. For us, it's far more important to provide the food for the soul.
Okay.
So it's the motivation comes from having those discussions to see the space. And then it's like what Michelangelo, you know, I understood perfectly about the David. Whatever the block of stone, whatever is not David, he chipped away.
Wow.
So it's like whatever is, you walk into a room and I've been hearing you and I know what is, you know, and as you're talking, I can visualize the space.
Amazing. You know, I've never heard this perspective of David, that, you know, he took a block and chipped away what was not David.
Really? But well, that's what he said. That's
I know, but I mean, I never heard it like that.
Good. This is your first time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, you know, when I was reading again about you and on your website, etc., you go from hotels to restaurants to home to retail. Again, my question is, how do you handle such a wide bandwidth of specialisms? Or do you have multiple people working in your teams?
We have multiple people. My partner is, her area is residential, largely. I do very few residential projects.
Okay.
My specialty is hospitality.
Okay.
Now, that could be hotels or restaurants or gyms, or basically areas where lots of people come together and you have a return on investment model and you have a definite client satisfaction model.
Okay.
It's not just...
So tell me some hotels that you've designed, if it's not confidential.
So, have you seen Karma Lakelands?
Yeah.
And you've seen the Karma Chalets?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done those.
Okay.
When I say I am talking about EDC space.
I know, I understand.
Yeah.
I understand. Very nice. So, you know, when do you undertake turnkey projects?
We don't do turnkey
projects. Oh, you don't do turnkey projects at all?
No.
But again, I've met many people who are architects and who design.
Yeah.
A lot of them use only materials which are indigenous.
Yeah.
And a lot of them import.
Right.
What is your philosophy?
So I would like nothing better to use material which is, one, first of all, sustainable, and second of all, available locally, also skills that are available locally. I would like to do that, but it's going to take time to get there. So in fact, in 91 or 92, I was interviewed by the Economic Times because of my use of alternate woods.
Okay.
At that point, I had stopped using teak, because teak was the only wood which was known. And I was using, you know, various other woods like kikar, which is acacia, now used and people used to look their nose down their noses
correct.
At it, as well as stone. Now stone is not you can, the mines are all finishing. How do you make that decision? So I'm happy to say that people have changed.
Okay.
So clients are now willing to experiment a little bit. So it's good.
That old craze of I must have my house built in Burma teak seems to have disappeared now. What probably is very expensive.
It's not disappeared, but it's disappearing. Thank God for that.
Yeah. Wonderful. So let's move on to a little bit about your travel. You know, you mentioned that you have traveled and lived in upper reaches of Ladakh and Kashmir.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about this passion. And you just mentioned that you're continuing it.
Yeah.
What takes you back to the mountains so often?
Oh, it's the amazing peace. The people are so simple and so lovely. It's the mountains. You know, I see a mountain, I want to climb it. It's the wildlife that's there. It's just the unspoiled beauty. I think the because it is so peaceful, I've been wanting to record it. So in different ways. And again, wildlife. Now the kind of birds and the kind of flora and fauna that you get at high altitudes, you don't have in the lower reaches. There was a time when women were not traveling in those areas, and I was doing photography. There was nobody doing photography in those areas. So those I used to get requests for the kind of photographs that I did, which was now everyone is going to Ladakh. But the joy of having seen walked across the Zanskar range, walking, there was no Manali to Leh route, walking from from Jispa across to all the way through Padang to Leh, the Wooler around the Kashmir area, which now nobody can go to, was amazing. I've lived with the shepherds there. It's
amazing.
I never wanted to come back.
Yeah.
I really didn't. My family was quite scared.
I agree. And mountains, I grew up in the mountains, Mussoorie, and studied there and Simla and all that. And I share a little bit of your passion for mountains. And, it is a completely different world when you're there.
Yeah.
They can also be a big challenge.
But I think that's the beauty of it, because it brings you down to the core of who you are. There's no way that ego can stand in your way in the mountains. If it does, you're dead.
Correct.
So there is, you feel so insignificant and yet so free. There's nothing outside that's restraining you, and you can dream.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And of course, the pace of life is much slower. So, one of my guests has a home, was telling me she has a homestay up at 16 or 17,000 feet.
Okay.
Lovely. And then a group of ladies went up there from Delhi and they couldn't accept, that the service levels cannot be the same that they are used to in a 5-star deluxe hotel. So she said that was one of the most challenging experiences I've ever had with a group of guests.
Yeah, so I have a home in near Mukteshwar as well. And once I reach there, everything is so slow. It's like something which needs to be, if a bulb needs to be changed, it can take 3 days to do that, which is okay.
You've got to accept it, I guess.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, let's talk about your the Best Woman Entrepreneur Award in 2012. Tell me about the award, and then I'm going to ask you a couple of questions on startups.
Okay, so this was the Federation of International Women Entrepreneurs, and they were looking, they have this, every 2 years, they have this award which they give out. Now, I was very surprised when I got it, because I didn't think that, that anyone knew what I was doing.
Correct.
But it turns out that I was nominated by several of the members, and they felt that I was making a difference, again, because there were very few women entrepreneurs who came out without having a family business or without having men behind them or supporting them for this. And I was, at that point, I was a solopreneur. So it was quite a shock, but pleasantly surprised. I was quite happy to receive that.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So, you mentioned solopreneur. That's an interesting segue to my next question. Because when I was reading your brochure, you got other partners as well.
Right.
So my question to you is that, is it good for a startup to go solo, or is it good to have co-founders?
It's, I think, very good to have co-founders if there is a high level of trust.
Okay.
If you know the people, then yes. Otherwise, For me, I would always probably be a solopreneur.
Mm.
One, I think very fast. Mm. I like to have my own way. I don't like to discuss everything to death.
Mm.
And I think once you've pushed something, an idea off the ground, then that's when you can get people on board because they understand the vision. Mm. And actually, that's what happened to me as well. So I would say if there is a lot of trust between two people, like I know friends who have started out together and, you know, done really well. It depends on the people who are involved.
And in the world that you are in,
yeah,
are there a lot of solopreneurs or do people generally like to work together?
Oh, wow. That's a lovely question. Thank you for asking that. So one of my visions in life is to organize a disorganized sector.
Correct.
Let's say in India, we have people who are competing at every stage. It's like, it's the gloves off, no holds barred, the winner takes all. Now, what happens in that is that people lose out, where instead of working with their core strength and, you know, helping everyone else come up as well, they are fighting each other to the death. So I know so many people who've closed shop. The, you know, architects, interior designers, people will claim to know how to do everything, which doesn't work.
Correct.
So the I think people are very, very severely competitive, and that's one of the design school faults or the architectural school faults. And in fact, I'm doing training programs for young professionals to get them to collaborate, to get them to be more, you know, collaborative with not only with other professionals in their line of, in their sphere, but also with people who are providing services and products for the industry. Because then it really begins to make sense. And end of the day, the client wins. Right now, the client is winning because he's fighting on price points. But because the industry is fighting on price points. But at the end, it's going to be way better. So what you see in Dubai and what you see in Israel, Israel has some of the best architecture I've seen.
Yes.
Stuff like that will begin to happen. Right now, it doesn't. Because people are not working with their core strengths, unfortunately.
I agree. I agree with you. So let's move to your book.
Yes.
You know, you wrote a book which is 1,000 Stories of Change.
Yes.
Tell me about the book.
So there is, 8 years ago, I joined an organization called BNI,
okay.
Business Network International. And, you know, that was a journey which was meant to be for, I thought I'd try it out for 3-6 months. Well, 8 years on and I'm still there.
Okay.
And what people come there to, you know, solopreneurs, SMEs, they come to share ideas, to get business, because it's referral marketing. It's not commission-based or not, nothing like that. What has happened over time is that people have changed. And the philosophy is giver's gain. And mission is changing the way the world does business.
Correct.
Now, what happens is, again, you have challenges in life, which may not have to do with business. And how people have impacted each other. As the stories began coming out, and I'm supporting a lot of chapters, I'm helping people, mentoring people there. As the stories started coming out, Shalini Sharma, who's one of the members and a graphic designer, she and I decided that we needed to write this. These needed to be known.
Okay.
A lot of people lose heart, Ashutosh.
Mm.
They lose that will to continue. They lose the will to follow their dreams. And these were stories that were coming out which told you that stay there, stay for the long haul, reach out for help. You have the help. So it was launched, in fact, in Poland last year in August.
Okay, wonderful. So let's move to another part of the show, which is, and I ask this as many guests as I can, but I certainly ask all my women guests on gender balance.
Okay.
All over the world, certainly in the developed world, gender balance is now getting very large amount of prominence.
Yeah.
Last 6-7 years, I'm beginning to see it in our country as well.
Yeah.
What are some of your views? And I know in your profession, there is reasonably better gender balance than there is in the corporate world.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that is correct.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on how can gender balance be improved at a much faster rate?
Now that is a very, very big question.
Mm-hmm.
So opportunities for women, mm-hmm. I think I think essentially women need a little bit of flexibility.
Correct.
We've lost a lot of people in our own firm when they've got married,
correct,
moved away, had babies, taken a couple of years gap, and then decided to stay home. Mm-hmm. Or they haven't had the support of the family. My belief is that if families and in schools, in, you know, when children are being educated, if they're taught that they can achieve their dreams, mm-hmm. it's not about the boy, you know, and supporting his family, it's about the girl getting out there, mm-hmm. and marriage not being the ultimate goal. It's about standing on your own 2 feet, because right. you can, tomorrow you could be on your own. Mm-hmm. I've been a single parent 20 years. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you have to put the get the realization in. And I think that's when women will look at it, look at their careers as not as options, but as something that they need to do.
I agree. I mean, I'm a very strong supporter of, you know, women must have their own career and their own life completely.
Yeah. And they can do it part-time. They can look after their kids and do it part-time.
I agree.
But men have to begin then to change nappies.
I agree with you. So now a few more questions for you, which are more personal questions.
Okay.
Over the years, and you know, you've been a mountaineer, you've been an author, your core specialism is a designer. Have you had any people who've had a strong influence on you? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Wow. How long do we have?
2 minutes.
Okay. So at every point in my life, I've had people come into my life and teach me things which I wouldn't have known otherwise. And they are my wealth.
Okay.
One of those you have already met, that's Shilpa Sharma. There are Anu Khurana. She was a client, but taught me perseverance and patience.
Okay.
And also taught me how to be business minded. There's Paritosh Pathak, who actually taught me to speak, to be able to speak in public.
Okay.
Mentored me through, I was very impatient, very reactionary. I think I've changed now. Not I think, I know I've changed. Mm-hmm. And it's been a long journey, but to begin to put in process has been amazing.
Okay.
So Malvika Tiwari is one of my mentors.
Okay. Okay.
She has been a life mentor. Hmm. She herself has been through many, many avatars.
Okay.
My father is my role model. He lost his leg in the 65 war.
Oh, okay.
And he was an Academy Blue in 14 sports. Mm-hmm. At 28, he was left with a baby and you know, how to support his family.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he's never lost his positivity.
Amazing.
And he's so knowledgeable. He's written books. He did his engineering. He's done so much, and never ever held me back.
Terrific.
So that was.
That's fantastic. So my next question to you would be that: what would be three words that define Hina?
Okay. So the one thing is that I never stay within three words or four people or five, whatever. I always go beyond that, right?
Sure.
I think I'm positive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm accountable, I'm definitely innovative, and I'm certainly curious.
Wonderful.
So,
in all my interviews, you're the first person who's used the word accountable.
Okay.
That's fantastic. I'm saying, as a coach, I'm saying,
thank you.
Very few people say, I'm accountable.
Yeah.
Well, that's excellent. So my next question to you, Hina, is on failure.
Yeah.
And I ask this from virtually every guest, because as Indians and as South Asians or Asians, we don't teach our children that it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
You know, everything is first aana hai, sabse aage rehna hai, etc., etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior.
Yeah.
Yet we fail all the time.
Yeah.
So my question is, what have been some of your learnings from your mistakes or your failures?
So I fail a lot because I've also wanted to do a lot. As an idealistic and, you know, talented, well-mentored person, I've tried doing many things, and one of my learnings was that you can't go it alone. You have to, that's why my competitive versus collaborative. And my second learning was that you have to work with your core strength. If there's something that you cannot do or that you're a little iffy about, don't go there.
Okay. So my last question to you, and this is again using all your years of experience for all the young people who are watching us or who are listening to us.
Yes.
What would your advice be to a young individual who's coming out of a design school or an architectural school and looking at senior people like you and say, I want to be there?
Okay, I hate the word senior.
Okay.
I know experienced. I know I have white hair, but I hate the word senior.
Okay, experienced.
Yes, thank you. My advice would be that, go out there and get some experience in a design firm. Try multifaceted design firms. It's not just one area that you need to focus on. Experiment while you can. You have a few years, experiment. Then maybe go out and do your master's in something which could be a little off the norm, but it'll teach you a lot. It may not seem as though it is, specifically what you want to do, but all that experience is going to round you off really well. So also focus on the business side of our profession. We are not taught that, we have to learn it. So that's my...
Wonderful. Yeah. Hina, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
Wish you lots of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.